You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Today we're going to talk about private credit, which is a first for me, so I'm rather intrigued by it. Why is it an asset class that apparently makes up 10% of so-called alternative investments globally? This and many other questions are going to be answered by Riabetswe Kungwane, investment specialist at 91 in Cape Town. Riabetswe, I'm being a cynic now. Is it because other asset classes are simply too expensive at the moment or too crowded that private credit has gained prominence, or is it a viable part of a portfolio on the other hand?
Hi, Lindsay. Thank you for having us. So I'll answer that question in two ways. Simply put, the answer is it's both. And the reason I say this is because private credit obviously gained prominence due to the crowded, expensive listed bonds and equity markets. That's just one of it. However, investors have picked up that it actually is a great building block for portfolios, not only in terms of diversifying out of these traditional asset classes, but also because it actually does offer predictable cash flows, lower volatility, shorter investment horizons relative to other alternatives such as private equity. And I guess in general, I'd say there was an element where structural factors drove the rise in private credit. And these structural factors include regulatory constraints that were put against the banks when we obviously experienced the global financial crisis. A lot of these banks had to retreat and manage their concentration risk. And as a result, private credit institutional investors saw a gap that they could fill alongside these traditional banks. And as a result of that, a lot of the borrowers, and these are companies, mid-market companies, saw that actually there's a need for flexible capital, particularly in emerging markets, that can be used in order to grow. And because of those particular reasons, you find the increase in prominence of private credit.
That's very interesting. So it's not just a way for people to diversify their portfolios, in other words, the investor, but also it oils the wheels of the financial system in a way that maybe couldn't have been said 10, 15 years ago when it wasn't so prominent.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, a lot of these economies, particularly in emerging markets, which is where we specialize mainly, you'd find that a lot of the banking systems are not as developed. And as a result, it just grew the demand for alternative forms of funding. And as an asset class, yes, it's now become close to 10% of the alternative asset class, second to private equity. But it also was, I guess, a realization by the markets that actually you could move out of the listed markets and into the more private markets in order to expand the capital markets of these regions. And there are multiple players in the space. Obviously, I mentioned institutional private credit providers, but you also have development financial institutions such as the IFC, who have actually catalyzed and assisted these capital markets to grow, particularly on the credit side.
I love examples, Riabetswe. So can you explain, or better still, give us an example of private credit, how it works and how it benefits both sides, the borrower and the lender, the investor and the corporate? Can you do that?
Yes, gladly. In terms of what private credit is, I mean, we highlight, just simply put, at its core, it's lending to mid-market companies. And so it's a normal loan facility that a corporate would perhaps find at a bank. But in this instance, they're dealing with an institutional investor. And that loan can take multiple forms. So within private credit, you find sub-strategies that may include senior direct lending. And so by senior, obviously, that's in terms of the ranking and cash flows that can be paid or derived from this loan where they are not encumbered to anything else. So that's quite senior and secure type funding. But you also find different types of private lending. These include infrastructure debt, real estate debt, and also over and above that, I'd say more distressed or special situation type debt. And why I highlight these different types of funding is that actual borrowers choose the type of instrument that they want. And some of these instruments, be it senior debt funding or the more subordinated, higher risk type funding, actually draw different forms of returns. So I would say that as a client or as a company that is borrowing from a private institution such as 91, you actually can structure flexible forms of debt, you know, that are predictable. You build a relationship with that institutional investor and you actually gain access to capital outside of the bond or the listed public markets, which a lot of these borrowers tend to want to do, to stay out of those public markets. That's on the one side.
Before you go on, Ribbit, sorry, they want to stay out of the public markets. Does that mean that they sacrifice liquidity, though?
If we're talking the company that's borrowing, they don't sacrifice liquidity. I think in the one way, they actually can get better liquidity because of the less administrative burden that you need to complete in order to be listed. So in a way, you can get your liquidity quite directly from the actual lender, in this instance being the investor. So they don't sacrifice liquidity. What they do prioritize is not having multiple lenders at one time. So you can still raise enough funding from as two or three large private credit players, as opposed to having your instrument be held broadly across the market. And when it's time to call on that instrument, it just becomes cumbersome. So an example would be, we've currently financed a solar facility. This is in the renewable energy space in South Africa. And this project is called Droogfontein Solar 2, which produces 75 megawatts in terms of just its capacity. And what we found is that obviously the actual borrower in this instance benefited from accessing capital for clean energy infrastructure. And this obviously supports the national energy goals. But on the other side, as an investor, we benefit from stable cash flows, from contractual protections, and this is a key factor in terms of private credit. You're secured by contractually by the asset that you borrow to or against. And as a result, you are in a better position as an investor. And over and above that, the investment actually aligns your impact to your commercial returns. And so it's really a nice blend of achieving financial return as well as real world impact.
Now, Ribitswe, it's claimed that private credit is suited to emerging markets more than developed markets. And one of the reasons why is because of the adaptability, no matter what the economic cycle is. I mean, whether we're in boom times or in recession. And because of that adaptability, it's typically more used in the emerging markets than it is in developed markets. Is that the case?
Correct. So if we think about DM versus EM, I mean, to be quite frank, we globally are facing very uncertain times. And as a result, all economic cycles globally obviously move around and they become very difficult to time. If we then just zoom in a bit on emerging markets, what we find, and if we take the case of a lot of these African countries that rely on minerals and commodities, their economic cycles tend to be volatile and also quite rapid. And I mean, the nature of it is that they're quite cyclical. As a result, when you take private credit as an asset class that we say is more defensive and resilient, if you were to apply a senior facility that I explained earlier, you'd find that you're able to actually receive your cash flows because of your seniority and the capital structure in a way that is just less volatile. And so as a result, it's an all-weather strategy. But in order to have a solid credit, private credit portfolio, you can complement that with the more opportunistic type credit or distress type special situation credit, which allow you to enter a market cycle during contractionary periods, as well as early expansion periods. So you can play around with the strategies found in private credit in order to just take advantage of economic cycles, particularly in emerging markets where they tend to be quite rapid and you can't time them well.
This is obviously a highly sophisticated asset class, Ribitswe. Who's it for? Is it just institutional investors or what about high net worth professional investors?
You're very right, Lindsay, in saying that it's quite sophisticated and it does require an experienced institutional investor who really has their feet on the ground. And as a result of that, private credit has traditionally been the domain of institutional investors. And by institutional investors, we're obviously talking pension funds, insurers, sovereign wealth funds, due to its complexity and scale. However, we are seeing a change in that a lot of wealth managers are coming to the fore to just essentially incorporate private credit into their client portfolios. So in a way, drawing the attention of professionals, as well as to an extent, retail investors. I mean, we are seeing more globally in the developed markets, a change and a drive, which is happening obviously faster than those in EM, around regulations where you can democratize private credit, in a way getting to a point where retail investors can participate. So in the US in particular, we've seen the rise of business development companies, which are publicly traded entities that issue private credit to businesses. And because of the public nature of those particular entities and the fact that you can trade in and out of them, they've become quite accessible to a select number of retail investors and professional investors. And so it is a growing trend that we are expecting to see in the more EM and growing market, yes, space.
Very final question. Are you getting more and more demand for private credit at 91?
Yes, we are. And it is as a result of this that we've seen a growth in the number of funds that we've had to create and raise, quite a lot of investor appetite. I mean, we recently launched our South Africa Infrastructure Credit Fund. As the name suggests, it focuses primarily on infrastructure in South Africa, in Africa, and I'd say offshore being broader EM, such as LATAM as well as Asia. And because of that, I mean, a lot of our investors are saying we want to invest in products that have real impact. You know, we want to be able to retire in areas and places that have sufficient and adequate infrastructure, you know, where we are seeing a growth in urbanization. And we want products that cater to that. But at the same time, we also want products that can generate stable returns, you know, that are resilient. And I'd say that relative to public markets can actually offer very attractive risk return dynamics. And so because of that, there's been quite a lot of growth and appetite coming through from our investors.
Ria Betse, thanks so much for your time. That was Ria Betse Kungwani, who is an investment specialist at 91. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.